The five times Nicky made food for his new neighbor, and the one time Joe returned the favor. By Okapi. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Tagliarini con sugo di verdure. Hello. How's it going? Finally, Nicky thought. For a month, Nicky had only caught a few fleeting glimpses of the handsome stranger who had moved in the apartment across the hall. But there had been no opportunity to even greet one another. Until now. Nicky watched his neighbor fumble with his keys. A plastic bag hung from one wrist and, Santa Maria Madre de Dio, a 24-pack of ramen noodle cups were propped under his other arm at hip level. The stranger had a riot of dark curly hair and matching beard. He was slightly taller than Nicky with a lean, strong build. He wore heavy, well-worn boots and a heavy, well-worn jacket. Afraid of being caught staring, Nicky turned his attention to his own door and his own keys. There followed the sound of ripping plastic and of swearing in a language Nicky didn't speak. Something knocked Nicky's foot. Nicky looked down. It was a can of Monster. Sorry, grumbled the neighbor. Nicky reached down to pick up the can. He heard plastic rustling, more swearing, than a heavy, jangling, sliding thud of things being thrown down in a frustrated heap. Nicky handed the can to the stranger and forced himself to smile through his nervousness. "Breakfast of champions," said the other in a friendly growl, which was punctuated by megawatt smile and, later Nicky would convince himself he imagined it, wink. Nicky could only nod. He bolted into his apartment like a rabbit into its burrow. He shut the door and leaned back against it and sighed. Then he frowned. Ramen and Monster for breakfast! Nicky reminded himself not to judge what other people ate and drank. Then he argued with himself that he wasn't judging. He was concerned for his neighbor's health. The utter conceit of a sudden anxiety about a complete stranger's potential nutritional deficiencies was not lost on Nicky. Nevertheless, it bothered him. Ramen and Monster. It bothered Nicky until he realized he hadn't even introduced himself to the handsome stranger. It bothered Nicky even more that it might be another month until their paths crossed again, until destiny granted him another opportunity. Nicky leaned against the door, feeling bothered for so many reasons, until he drew himself out of his thoughts and regarded his kitchen. "Just being friendly, just being neighborly, no harm in that," Nicky chanted silently to himself. Deep breath. Nicky knocked. The door opened. "Hi, I'm Nicky from across the hall." Nicky pointed unnecessarily at his own front door. "I made far too much tagliarini con sugo di verdure, that is, pasta with vegetable sauce." Nicky's bottom lip seemed to stumble over the words, even the Italian ones, and he looked down at the wrapped dishes, which were cradled in his arms like a baby. All at once, Nicky felt very foolish. "And I was wondering..." He looked up into the warmest brown eyes he'd ever seen. "Would you like some?" "That's very kind. I'd love some." The stranger's lips curled in a soft, sleepy smile. "I'm Joe, by the way." Joe took the dishes from Nicky. He looked down and sniffed. "Wow, this smells really, really good. There's some salad, too. Just arugula." Nicky got lost again, in the brown eyes gazing fondly. Nicky decided later that was wishful imagination. Into his. "Also walnuts and pears with olive oil and a little bit of fontina," continued Nicky. "Do you have any allergies?" Nicky's gut clenched, hoping for a negative reply. "No, no allergies." Joe's face clouded. "No pork in this?" "No, no pork," said Nicky with much more excitement than the phrase warranted. Joe's expression softened. He nodded. "Thanks. I'll have it right now for breakfast." "Now?" Breakfast? Repeated Nikki. It was evening. I work nights. Oh, sure. You're very welcome. Enjoy. There was an awkward silence. Then Nikki turned on his heels and for the second time fled into his apartment, his heart pounding in his chest and his face flushed with victory. The next morning, Nikki almost stepped on it as he was rushing out. It was lying on the floor, about a foot from the crack under the door. The flat paper flower was a pinwheel of blues greens streaked with metallic silver. Nikki smiled. Then he pulled the tips of two petals gently and found the flower open to reveal a message written in the center in silvery calligraphy. It was delicious. Thank you, Joe. Nikki turned it over and studied the note from all sides. The back was decorated with an intricate pattern of vines. Nikki opened and closed the flower several times. It was exquisite and, if Nikki wasn't mistaken, handmade. Even though Nikki was already tragically late for work, he stepped out of his apartment and waited a few moments, just in case Joe emerged. He didn't. Nikki raced off to work, lightheaded nonetheless. To be continued. The five times Nikki made food for his new neighbor and the one time Joe returned the favor. Chapter 2. Canestrelli. 10 days. Nikki had not seen Joe for 10 days, not since he'd brought Joe the pasta and salad. Joe worked nights, Nikki often reminded himself, but then Nikki sometimes went on to tell himself that Joe worked nights and, perhaps, at that very moment was washing his instant noodles down with an energy drink. Nikki shuddered every time. After a week, Nikki had decided to cook something else for Joe. 2 days were spent debating what precisely to cook. Finally, Nikki decided to bake. Canestrelli. Simple, sweet, everyone liked cookies. Nikki covered a plate of the daisy-shaped cookies with a cloth and, with hands full, crossed the 4 steps to Joe's door. Nikki knocked. Nikki waited, moving his lips, rehearsing what he would say. No answer. Nikki retreated to his own apartment. Give up? Consume the whole lot in defeat? The image of ramen and monster came flooding back, and it was enough to prompt Nikki to marshal his courage. No, he would not give up. Nikki put the cookies on a foil pan and wrapped them securely. Then, on a whim, he made a small bag of mixed nuts and dried figs and set it on top of the cookies. Then he selected the best of the oranges in his fruit bowl and set it beside the foil pan. Was it too much? Nikki scowled at the orange. Joe did not appear to be suffering from scurvy. Nikki didn't even know if Joe liked oranges. It was too forward. It was too bold. Nikki made to put away the cloth shopping bag. Then his eyes fell on the beautiful note Joe had slipped under his door. It had a place of prominence propped up on the kitchen counter, and Nikki reassured himself that he was overthinking things, as usual, and that it wasn't too much. It was kind. It was neighborly. Nikki crossed the hall once more and hung the bag on the doorknob of Joe's apartment. He had been so eager for Joe to open the door earlier, but oddly enough, now, it was the last thing he wanted. Nikki flew back to his own apartment and didn't breathe until his own door was closed. Nikki had stuck his head out into the hall about a dozen times, checking Joe's door and the bag, which was still there, when he realized he hadn't put any kind of note in the bag. He chastised himself. Surely Joe would know it was from him. Were there other neighbors feeding Joe? No. But it would be impolite not to include a note, wouldn't it? By the time Nikki had decided what to write and written it, after 5 discarded drafts, and opened his door to add it to the bag was gone. Cazzo, breathed Nikki. There was no note on Nicky's floor the following morning, and to stave off disappointment, he spent the whole day conjuring a series of more and more unlikely reasons for it. Joe didn't want to encourage Nicky's attention. Joe didn't like Nicky's baking. Joe had never gotten the bag. Someone had stolen it from the door. Joe had, in fact, an allergy, one which had been secret even to himself, and he had consumed Nicky's offering and died of anaphylaxis, and his body was, at that moment, decomposing in his apartment. There was a note on the floor when Nicky returned home. Nicky carefully removed the card from the envelope. "Thank you, Joe." The message was written in tiny print on stiff paper, but there were a series of small arrows on the edges of the paper. Nicky tugged and separated and folded and creased and slowly realized, to his astonishment, that the letter formed a little scene when it was stood up on its side. It was a room, with two halls leading off the main chamber. No, it wasn't a room. There were tiny pictures in frames painted on the walls and doorways leading in and out. It was an art gallery, a miniature art gallery. Nicky peered inside the gallery from above and recognized Botticelli's The Birth of Venus. No, it wasn't an art gallery. It was a room in a museum, a very famous room, in a very famous museum, in fact. Nicky wrapped his head around the fact that his handsome, clever, talented neighbor had crafted a tiny Uffizi out of paper for him. Joe was an artist. It might be a hobby or it might be more, but no one made things like this without some artistic sensibility. Nicky had never been smitten with an artist before. He'd always gone for solid, dependable, and, if he were honest, unimaginative types. Safe bets, no drama, no hearts broken because no hearts were ever exchanged. But there was no denying it. Nicky was certainly smitten with an artist now. Of course, it was easy to be smitten when you knew nothing about someone and they knew nothing about you. Just an infatuation. And that was okay. It was okay to be infatuated, Nicky told himself. Joe was romantic. He was an artist, and out of kindness, he was injecting a bit of romance and art into Nicky's world, as was Joe's nature. That was a good thing. Nicky lived far too much in his own head. Nicky had made his move, and Joe had made his. It was Nicky's turn. What should he do? To be continued. The five times Nicky made food for his new neighbor, and the one time Joe returned the favor. Chapter 3. Zuppa di verdure con ditalini. Joe hadn't meant to be rude. He genuinely had no idea who the creature from the Black Lagoon plodding up the stairs behind him was. It had been raining all day, hard and heavy. Gutters were overflowing, and the sprays from passing cars were up to waist height. Unfortunately, Joe had first-hand knowledge of this last fact. Joe, who never paid attention to weather reports and had left the building without so much as an umbrella, was soaked to the bone. A quick trip to the corner for a can of soup was enough to give him the appearance of a drowned rat. But this person walking behind Joe had evidently gotten the memo. The person was clad, head to foot, in old-fashioned oilskins, hat, tent-like poncho, and boots. The brim of the hat was turned down, the boots squished, the domed hunter of an elusive whale, or a sinister fisherman, the kind eager to scrape some unsuspecting person's face off with a hook on the end of his arm. Joe indulged in amusing, fantastic speculation to distract himself from his waterlogged state. He approached his door and dug out his keys. Sinister fisherman stopped across the hall. Oh. Nicky? The brim was pulled back by a hookless hand, revealing a pair of beautiful green-blue eyes framed by the hood of the poncho. Nicky's gaze fell from Joe's face to the plastic bag in Joe's hand. It clouded briefly, then returned to Joe's face and cleared. "Hello, Joe."
"Nice weather we're having," said Joe.
"But you look prepared for it."
"Yes, you..."
Joe laughed and shook water from his curls. "Not so much, eh?" Nicky snorted adorably, his eyes shining with mirth, until they drifted to Joe's bag. His brow crinkled. Then he quickly pivoted, turning his back to Joe. Joe heard the jingling of keys and wondered if he was going to get a third look from his neighbor. Instead of opening his door, Joe struck a casual, cocky pose, leaning in his own doorway but facing the corridor, with one arm bent and his head resting against his hand. It wasn't lost on Joe that Nicky disapproved of his food choices, so much so that he felt compelled to supplement Joe's diet from his own excellent kitchen. Joe wasn't complaining. In fact, it amused as well as nourished him. The can of condensed tomato soup in Joe's bag, with its recognizable red and white label, was definitely on the receiving end of Nicky's disapproval. Joe waited. His patience was quickly rewarded. Right before Nicky made to disappear into his own apartment, he turned a final time to look in Joe's direction. That is, the direction of the tinned nemesis. Joe grinned. "Gotcha." Nicky started violently, and Joe was willing to bet he was blushing inside his oilskins. A savory aroma of herbs and onions drifted into the hall from Nicky's apartment. "Why do I think you're going to be eating much better than me tonight?" called Joe before his neighbor could vanish into his apartment.
"You're wrong," replied Nicky with charming bravado. "You're going to be eating just as well as I am tonight. That is, if you accept my invitation."
He held his door open with a poncho-covered arm and made an ushering gesture with the other. "Zuppa di verdure con ditalini, that is."
"I know what that is," said Joe. "Crusty bread, too?"
"Of course," said Nicky. "And butter," he added haughtily. Joe clutched his chest as if struck by Cupid's arrow. Then he looked down at his sodden, soggy form. "Can I have 10 minutes?
"Take your time."
"Welcome. Please make yourself at home." Joe's first impression of Nicky's apartment was green. The scent of herbs and the sheer number of houseplants struck him forcibly. Once his senses adjusted, Joe was able to appreciate the place better. This was how grown-ups lived, thought Joe. There was comfortable furniture, a sofa and oversized chair, and discreetly hidden electronics. There were sturdy bookcases filled with books. There were rugs and throw pillows. And there were many, many plants. Nicky lived on the side of the building that had two-bedroom apartments with balconies, as opposed to Joe's small one-room-for-everything floor plan. The rain was still coming down, hitting the glass sliding door with unrelenting ferocity. Joe remarked on it.
"I know," Nicky said as he busied himself in the kitchen.
"I had to bring all the plants in. I didn't want them to get drowned, or blown away, or tipped over." Joe's eyes found the cards he'd slipped under Nicky's door, propped up against the wall on the kitchen counter, and he smiled. He strode casually to the bookcases and perused the spines. Novels and short stories and poetry, philosophy and religion, and cookbooks. Then Joe noted the blank walls. He looked around. No photographs. No art. Interesting.
"Almost ready," said Nicky, ladling soup into bowls. "Do you have to work later?"
"No, I'm off Tuesdays and Fridays."
"Lucky you."
Nicky moved to cutting thick slices of bread.
"I work in a warehouse," said Joe.
Nicky hummed.
"I work in a call center."
"Oh, God," Joe winced. "I'm sorry." Nicky smiled.
"I accept your condolences. I would say it had its moments, but that would be a lie. It doesn't. I work the day shift, weekdays only, but I don't know if that makes much difference. Do you mind if we eat here?"
There were two chairs on the far side of the kitchen counter.
"It smells so good, I don't care where we eat," said Joe truthfully. They talked about Tunis and Genoa and family. They swapped horror stories from work. They talked about books and films and art and football. The soup wasn't just warming and hearty and savory, thought Joe. It was also, in its way, beautiful. Joe admired the colors, the oranges and red and greens and whites in a dark terracotta-colored bowl, and the way it contrasted with the lighter colors of the bread and butter. When Joe had tucked away two bowlfuls of the handsome soup and about half of the bread, he declared himself a most contented individual. "Not that I haven't thoroughly enjoyed the meal," he said, patting his tummy. "But as you're from Genoa, I was half expecting..." "Pesto," said Nicky. Joe nodded. "Next time?" "I grow my own basil. I'll cook you a proper meal next time, Joe. I promise."
"This wasn't proper?" retorted Joe, affronted on the soup's behalf.
"This was a rainy day meal. Let's..." Nicky blushed. "That is, would you mind if we planned for it? That way I could, you know, make certain it was right. Get the right things. Tuesday, maybe? Or next Friday?"
"Tuesday's fine with me. Before I go, can I ask you a question?"
"Of course."
"I'm just curious." "I'm curious about you, too," Nicky smiled shyly. Joe chuckled. "No, it's not... well, that, exactly. I don't mean any offense at all. But why don't you have anything on the walls? I mean, the rest of the apartment seems so well furnished and comfortable, but the walls are bare."
"Oh." Nicky looked at the walls as if seeing them for the first time. He shrugged. "I don't know. I never really thought about it. I have no artistic sense whatsoever. I suppose I haven't discovered anything I want to put on the walls yet."
Nicky turned his head, and Joe watched as Nicky's gaze went to Joe's cards.
"You really are amazing, Joe."
It was the second time Nicky had said it, just like that, without preamble or embarrassment. The first time was when he was thanking Joe for the notes and asking how Joe had made the museum card. And just like the first time, Joe felt his skin run hot and his blood pound in his ears.
"I'm flattered."
"And aroused," Joe didn't add. Nicky was gorgeous and kind. There was a part of Joe that couldn't help himself. It was the way he expressed his feelings, how he chose to say what he wanted to say. His was a spirit that could not be entirely reined in by the banality and cruelty of modern life, and the lessons of his own past foolishness. Joe had been so touched by Nicky's generosity and thoughtfulness, even if it was provoked by a bit of food snobbery, that he had to make something nice, something beautiful for him. Joe felt compelled. He was built that way. But as far as anything more than friendship and neighborliness, Joe hesitated. He had given his heart away so many times, and it had always come back to him shattered, trampled, or simply discarded without so much as a backward glance. He really didn't know Nicky at all. And Joe suddenly recalled in vivid detail all the things he'd been running away from when he moved across the hall, and the recollection sobered him instantly. Joe thanked Nicky as profusely as possible while remaining an arm's length from his host, and said good night. To be continued. The five times Nicky made food for his new neighbor, and the one time Joe returned the favor. Chapter 4. Crocchetti al pesto genovese. Joe was frustrated. It was Tuesday, and he'd woken up early to get something to bring to Nicky's, but he couldn't find anything that felt appropriate, and he was too conscious of money to buy something that didn't suit. He was on his way back to his apartment, mentally resigning himself to the fact that he was going to show up on a neighbor's doorstep, a neighbor who had cooked for him four times, empty-handed. But then he met Nicky in the hall, hurrying the other way, looking frazzled.
"Cazzo! Joe!"
"Hey, what's wrong? Are we still on for tonight?"
"Yes, yes, but Joe..."
Here Nicky, perhaps unknowingly, switched to his native language. I ran out of...
Nicky, what is...
Nicky pulled at his hair, evidently trying to conjure the word.
Eggs!
How many do you need?
Just one.
Joe smiled. I have eggs.
The way Nicky looked at him, a rapturous mixture of relief and delight, was adorable.
May I?
Of course. Come on, right now.
Thank you, Joe, thank you.
The high of coming to Nicky's rescue was so strong that Joe didn't realize the implications of what he suggested until it was too late, until Nicky was staring at the interior of Joe's apartment.
Oh.
Fuckity fuck fuck. Yeah, Joe did not live like a grown-up. Someone crass might say that Joe lived like a child, or a homeless person, or a nomad. But Joe would never say that, because he had too much respect for children, the homeless, and nomads. Joe's furniture was boxes, with the occasional milk crate, wooden pallet, and cinder block thrown in for variety. There were heavy curtains on the one window, a necessity for the nocturnal. But unlike Nicky's apartment, there were no rugs, no plants, no throw pillows. Nothing much, really, except Joe's art. And his art was everywhere. Finished pieces, framed and unframed, crowding the walls. Unfinished pieces on easels and makeshift easels and propped up against walls. Sketches taped to walls and left lying strewn about on the bare floorboards. Paint and pencils and sketchbooks and rags and jars and... If Nicky noticed the Spartan nature of the space, he didn't say anything. Joe was forced to conclude that he hadn't noticed. Nicky's eyes were on the art.
May I?
He asked, pointing to the easel that was turned away from the door.
Sure.
Joe found the words slipping off his tongue before he had a chance to think, before he had the wherewithal to remember that he had never, ever allowed anyone to view a work in progress before. Not that many had asked. Nicky circled the easel.
Oh!
He jumped, visibly startled, his eyes round, and his mouth hanging open. As far as reactions to Joe's art went, it was perfect. Visceral, genuine, and,
"It's gorgeous, Joe. You made this?"
Positive.
Yeah.
To hide his embarrassment, Joe went to the refrigerator and got the egg. He found he had nothing to put it in, so he just carried it back to Nicky in his hand.
"It's the walls of Jerusalem. At the sacking, $10.99.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So moving. So rich.
Even without, you know, the people?
Yes. There's evidence of the people, even without them being represented in the work. Almost like a negative space? Or maybe I'm using that phrase wrong."
Joe would have really, really liked to sink into a philosophical discussion of his art with Nicky. He was only prevented from doing so by the priority of the cold, round, delicate thing resting in his palm.
"I'm glad you like it. Here you go."
Nicky took the egg and stared at it.
"Oh, yes," he said softly. "I forgot."
Joe was so caught up in Nicky's reaction, he also forgot about something. A small square canvas was leaning upon a makeshift easel behind them, and charcoal and pencil sketches and even a photocopy of a page from a cookbook were taped around it. Nicky turned and jumped again.
"My soup! You painted my soup!"
"It's not finished yet," Joe said quickly, but no disclaimer could diminish the sheer joy in his chest or the joy in Nicky's exclamation.
"You painted my soup!"
He squealed in childlike exuberance. Then Nicky turned his head, and Joe saw his eyes were wet.
"And my bread and butter," he added, sniffing, his voice cracking.
Joe was very much afraid if Nicky started weeping that he would start weeping, but no.
Crack! Squish! Cazzo!
breathed Nicky as the egg, white and yolk and bits of shell, oozed from his closed hand.
I've got another one, Joe assured him, and plenty of rags.
There were fewer plants inside Nicky's apartment, but on the balcony was a kind of a garden in and of itself, the kind Joe couldn't help but appreciate. While Nicky was setting plates out, Joe browsed Nicky's bookshelves again. He spied a tote bag slouched against the wall. The bag was full of books, and when Nicky wasn't looking, Joe sneaked a peek. These were from the nearest public library, an assortment of fiction and nonfiction similar to that on the shelves. But Joe did spy Islamic Art, 650 to 1250, and The Heat Is On, Fiery Harissa Recipes, among the lot. Nicky, it seemed, was determined to steal Joe's heart by stealth and by stomach. The meal, as anticipated, was excellent. Nicky seemed more relaxed than he'd been at their first meal together, relaxed to the point of holding forth on what was apparently his favorite subject, food. Not cooking per se, but food. For example, with first course, Nicky expounded on the varieties of tomatoes and their strengths and weaknesses with regard to being stuffed with an excellent combination of onions, peppers, eggplant, cheese, breadcrumbs, and herbs. Joe listened and partook of the stuffed tomatoes with greater appreciation than he might have. He refrained from snickering when Nicky began to talk at length about all the different vegetables that could be stuffed and how they were popular in his native Liguria during the summer. They talked about aubergines and eggplant. They talked about courgettes and zucchini. Joe hadn't known how to choose the best specimens of these vegetables before, but he did now. Conversation switched to green beans with the arrival of a crocchetti al pesto genovese to the table. There followed lots of discussion about herbs and spices. Joe was on firmer footing there. Lastly, there was served the apple cake, which was, thanks to Joe, baked with the requisite number of eggs. Nicky talked about the shops, the farmers' markets, and the plant nurseries he visited on every Saturday. Something he said gave Joe pause. Wait, you take the bus?
Yes, I use that cart. Nicky pointed to a metal cart on wheels folded in the corner.
Next time I'm taking you, I have a car.
You have a car?
Why Joe had a car was a bit like why Joe had to leave his last place, so he quickly went on. Yeah, this Saturday I'll take you, and you can show me how to pick out the good stuff.
Nicky frowned. I usually go early.
The earlier the better, as far as I'm concerned. I try to keep to a sleep schedule, so by mid-morning I'm wiped out.
Oh, well, okay. That would be very kind.
It'll make me feel better about not bringing something tonight.
Don't feel obligated, Joe. I do it because I like it, and I like sharing with you.
And I like helping you. But you know you've gone and spoiled the surprise a bit.
What surprise?
My next thank you note.
Oh.
Joe watched the realization dawn.
The soup painting.
It's not done yet, warned Joe.
But when it is, Joe made a gesture. It'll be mine? You'll help me find the right place for it, won't you?
There was very little Joe realized he wouldn't help Nicky do. Joe crossed the hall about 20 minutes later, laden with a stack of leftovers in plastic containers. To be continued. The 5 times Nicky made food for his new neighbor, and the 1 time Joe returned the favor. Chapter 5. Sandwiches and Pellegrino. Saturday was fun. Joe enjoyed tagging along behind Nicky, listening to him lecture about rapini and sunchokes and sardines.
I'm talking too much.
I like your voice. It was nearing noon when they finished, and Joe knew he was in serious danger of falling asleep on his feet.
I'll make something for you tonight. I'll leave it by your door, said Nicky.
Joe shook his head. No, please. I won't have time to eat. I can always tell when I'm going to sleep late. I'm fading, Nikki. I've got to go. I had a great time.
Okay. Not even something simple? Something you can take with you?
There are croissants. I can make sandwiches.
The urge to enfold Nikki in his arms and kiss him senseless was too strong.
I've got to go, said Joe gently, and he hoped apologetically. He walked backwards toward Nikki's door and gripped the doorknob. I'm sorry.
Sure, sure. I didn't mean to press. I'm sorry.
You've been such a help. I really can't thank...
Nikki, I've got to go.
Joe let the door close behind him.
You couldn't help yourself, could you? Muttered Joe as he peered into the bag that had been hanging on his door when he left for work. There were croissants, some filled with cheese and harissa, and some filled with fig and apricot jam, he would later discover, and a couple of bottles of Pellegrino. Utterly adorable, wholly lovable, and just a bit of a snob.
To be continued.
The five times Nikki made food for his new neighbor, and the one time Joe returned the favor. Chapter 6. Couscous and Mint Tea with Pine Nuts. It was Friday when Joe woke early and popped down to the corner. He had planned to cook, that is, to practice a few dishes, before he invited Nikki over, but paradoxically he had to eat first. So breakfast of champions it was. Earlier in the week, Joe outfitted his apartment with a table, two more folding chairs, and a couple of drinking glasses that had never known turpentine or bristle. He had settled on a couple of recipes and bought the necessary ingredients, remembering Nikki's wisdom. Joe waved to Mrs. Chin at the register and then,
Nikki?
Nikki froze. He wore an oversized black hoodie and was holding a basket. That alone would have been unusual. No one used the baskets at the mini-market. But he also was alarmingly pale, and dark circles hung under his eyes, and his beautiful lips were dried to the point of cracking and bleeding. Joe glanced at the contents of Nikki's basket and gasped,
"Ramen! And chocolate milk!"
"Are you okay?" asked Joe, who knew Nikki was definitely not okay. Nikki shook his head. His bottom lip trembled.
"I got fired yesterday."
"Oh, shit."
"Not just me. There were, 10 of us."
"That sucks, Nikki. I'm really sorry."
"Yeah, I haven't felt like cooking."
"Hey, why don't you come to my place for dinner? I'll cook." Nikki blinked owlishly.
"I've been practicing," Joe lied, "to show off for you."
He winked.
"Really?"
Joe nodded. "Come on. You know you don't want this." He took the ramen from Nikki's basket and set it on the shelf. "But I can understand how this might be a comfort." He smiled at the chocolate milk. "Bring that along." Couscous, chicken, vegetables. Joe could do this. Nikki didn't feel like talking, which was good because the meal preparation was taking all of Joe's mental faculties. Nikki was walking around, looking at Joe's art piece by piece, giving each careful study, and, Joe was gratified to note, completely ignoring the lack of home decor and furnishings and any sort of comfort. Joe was glad he'd finished the soup painting. He could gift it to Nikki tonight, and maybe it would cheer him up a bit. Sooner than he was expecting, Joe placed two plates on the table.
"I'm sorry," said Joe, "about the job. It's shit, utter shit."
"Thank you. This looks great, by the way." He pointed at the plate with his spoon.
"Let's hope it tastes good, too."
"So did you know it was coming? The sack, I mean?"
"No, it took us all by surprise."
Nikki put a spoonful in his mouth and hummed.
This is better than ramen. So much better. Oh, God, Joe, how am I going to make rent?
No savings?
Some. I can manage a couple of months, but after that I need to have found something nor...
You have the second bedroom.
Worst comes to worst. You can get a roommate.
Nicky wrinkled his nose.
You know someone?
Joe took a deep breath and said as offhandedly as he could manage,
I'm month to month here. Oh, God, Joe, why? It's so much more expensive.
He read something in Joe's expression and flinched. Oh, not my business. Sorry.
Nah, don't worry about it. Last place I was at, the person I was living with threw my stuff out of a third-story window.
Nikki's eyes went round.
Joe!
Joe chuckled ruefully.
I know, just like in the movies. Luckily, my art stuff was all in the trunk of my car. Everything else fell on the pavement. Some people helped me collect stuff. Some people did not. My favorite pair of jeans are walking around somewhere. And when I find the bastard who snatched them off the parking meter...
Why, Joe? I mean, why did they throw your stuff out the window?
Artistic temperament?
Theirs, not mine. After that, I was living in my car for a week until I found this place. That's why I still have a car, even though it would be cheaper not to. I never know when things are going to go bad. And when they go bad, they often go really bad, and I need a place to stay.
Joe.
Nicky was shaking his head and shoveling couscous in his mouth.
Artistic temperament, huh? Euphemism for mental illness, or just Goddard and variety bastard?
Lots of passion, lots of feelings, lots of highs and lows. But I have discovered the hard, hard, hard way that oftentimes those of us with artistic temperaments just want an audience or a muse or a recreational drug. And if someone isn't in the mood to be any of those, well, we aren't in the mood for you. I count myself among them without a doubt. But I was so done after the last. A lot of things became clear. Things I didn't even have a name for. I didn't want to put down any roots of any kind. I just wanted to be left alone.
Oh. I haven't exactly left you alone, have I?
I'm glad you haven't. I think what I thought I wanted wasn't really the best thing for me. But hey, shame on me bringing you down. I'm supposed to be comforting you.
Why? Asked Nicky blankly.
Joe laughed.
Because you just lost your job, Nicky.
Oh, yeah. Nicky smiled sheepishly.
I forgot. My turn?
Please.
It's awful. What am I going to do?
Get another job, of course. Survive somehow.
Nicky opened his chocolate milk and raised it. To your health, sir.
They ate in silence for a few minutes. Then Nicky asked for seconds. They resumed eating.
After a while, Nicky asked quietly, You don't have to tell me, if you don't want to, but, Joe, why was all your art stuff in the trunk of your car?
Joe met Nicky's eyes and could not bring himself to respond with anything but honesty.
I didn't trust him with it. It mattered to me, but deep down I knew it didn't matter to him. I knew that he would not respect it, and that he couldn't possibly take care of it.
Nicky nodded. They finished the couscous in silence. Then Joe produced dates and nuts and mint tea and sugar.
Joe, one thing. I'll just say one thing, and you can interpret it however you like.
Joe hummed, scattering pine nuts under the surface of the hot amber liquid, not trusting his voice. The way Nicky was looking at him, the way his own heart was pounding. It was as if the dam had broken and the floodwaters were rushing forth.
I don't know much about art, Joe, but I know how to take care of things and people. It's about the only thing I do know.
And if I gave you my heart, said Joe gruffly,
it would be safe.
Joe believed him.
Nikki wouldn't throw a heart out of a window, or leave it behind at a restaurant, or pawn it for something newer and shinier. Joe took a sip of tea, then asked, "But Nikki, what could I give you in return?"
"Besides a portrait of my own soup, you mean?"
Nikki flashed Joe a tiny smile. "Yes, of course, apart from that." Joe's own smile faded. "I don't know. Color? Poetry?
You're a poet, too?"
"Yes."
"Poor thing. I hope your journals and notebooks were also in the trunk of your car."
Joe laughed ruefully and nodded. "They were, but my best pen. Not so lucky." Nikki set his tea down with a thud. "Bastard."
"Yeah, but forget about him. Forget about all of them."
Joe had. Just like that. He'd thrown off all the bitterness he'd been carrying so close to his heart. It was simplicity itself with Nikki in front of him.
"I'm not going to waste another thought on them," said Nikki. "Do you know what you could give me in return, Joe? Passion. Give me something, someone to be really passionate about. And just between you and me, I think I'm already working on it, one meal at a time."
"It's so easy to love you, Nikki."
"Funny. I was thinking the same thing about you."
Joe leaned in and cupped Nikki's jaw. "Hello," said Joe. Nikki raised an eyebrow.
"How's it going?"
Their lips met. Finally, Joe thought. The end.